weren't leaving by 8, 11:30, are we? No. Good. I want to be interrupted. Though the information the priest had was sketchy, he nonetheless told Ed Warren that two young nurses had communicated with what they took to be a human spirit. The priest doubted that was the case, however, because the plea for help included the fact that one of the girl's friends had been attacked physically. Though the wounds were not serious, activity was still in progress, and one of the girls seemed to think there was something alien inside her apartment. Would you, he asked, the priest that is, investigate the case further and as a demonologist recommend if any formal church action should be taken? Agreeing with the clergyman's assessment that something of a negative spirit nature might conceivably be at work, Ed Warren accepted the referral. With that, the priest gave Ed the phone number and names of the two young women. After speaking with the priest, Ed immediately called the number he had been given. Upon reaching one of the nurses, Ed verified the existence of the problem and told the young women that he and Lorraine were on the way. Though the traffic was light on the interstate that day, it took the Warrens well over an hour to reach the address of the modern low-rise apartment complex. After parking the car, the Warrens walked up to the front door and Ed rang the bell. He carried with him a tape recorder, camera, and black attaché case. Footsteps soon approached from inside. Bolt locks were unsnapped, and the door was opened by Donna Jennings, an attractive but sober-faced young lady of 25. Ed and Lorraine Warren introduced themselves and were then ushered into the apartment. The young nurse led the Warrens through a spacious living room into the kitchen. There, Lou Carlo and his fiancée, Angie Stapleton, sat at the table drinking coffee. Donna introduced the Warrens to them, but the young people said very little. The serious, drawn look on their faces said it all. The Warrens then took a seat with the others at the table, and after loading a cassette into the recorder, Ed switched on the machine, entered the time, date, address, and full name of the principals. "Okay," Ed began. "I'd like to hear the whole story right from the beginning. Who here can tell me?" "I can," said Donna. "All right. Lou, Angie, please add any details she leaves out," Ed directed. "There are two stories, really," Donna said. "One that began earlier in the week with Lou. The other one's about Annabelle. But I suppose they're both about Annabelle. I'm not sure." "Who's Annabelle?" Ed promptly asked. "Who's Annabelle?" Ed promptly asked. "It's too cold in here, Mike. Who's Annabelle?" Ed promptly asked. "She belongs to Donna," Angie replied. "Belongs?" questioned Lorraine. "Is Annabelle a live, breathing being?" "Is she alive?" Donna repeated quizzically. "She moves. She acts alive. But no, I don't think she's alive. Annabelle's in the living room." "Annabelle's in the living room," said Angie, pointing across the table. "She's sitting on the sofa." Lorraine looked to her left, into the living room. Lorraine looked to her left, into the living room. "No. Ain't nobody interested in my stories. I don't have to read them. I've been reading prestigious Catholic demonologists. I've been reading Beowulf, classical Scandinavian epic literature. Now here, let's go to the other extreme. Clear over to the Pentecostal, full gospel, charismatic frame. Lester Sumrall. an old tiger, a pastor in South Bend, Indiana, originally with the Assemblies of God. More recently, with other full gospel groups, the true story of Clarita Villanueva. I started with the Catholics. All I'm really doing is, and then what I did on Bermuda Triangle, just kept piling it up till the Gestalt comes home. There's more there than meets the eye. Pyramid. I like the Gestalt things. There's just a lot of strange things going on in the world. Most people who don't believe in UFOs have not studied the evidence. I don't know what they are, but there's something that's causing all of these sightings. Now, the Bible is just full of demon activity, supernatural activity. I think it's time somebody take an intelligent look at all of it. Now, you can't get much further apart than these Ed Warrens, unless there's somewhere on the other spectrum. Ed Warrens use holy water and crucifix. Lester Sumrall's gotten more congenial in his old age. I know Lester. I've preached in his churches in Manila and the church he founded in Hong Kong. We've conducted seminars together. Most of the day we cancel each other out. He's an old tiger. I like Lester. We come from two different generations, but there's one thing about Lester Sumrall. He's a man, and he's an honest man. And what he did in the Manila situation, I've been there. This is one I don't have to send a Ghostbuster for. I've been there with my own eyes. I've preached in the church. The Methodist minister whose life was changed and became his associate interpreted for me. I know the people involved. I don't need anybody to tell me this one. Daily Mirror, May 12, 1953. Well, let me give you an introduction. The Metropolitan Radio and Press of Manila and the World Press carried the sensational story of a young provincial girl who had been picked up on the streets of Manila for vagrancy and placed in Bilibid Prison, which is the Manila City Jail. This girl, who goes by the name of Clarita Villanueva, suffered torments supposedly inflicted by devils or demons. The newspapers gave sensational front-page reports of the happenings in the city jail. The following are some. The Daily Mirror, May 12, 1953. A city jail inmate puzzled police and medical examiners with her tale about two devils biting her 20 times last night. Oh, I can't read these things. This is newspapers. Whatever is in the newspaper is okay to read. Sergeant Guillermo Abad, detailed with the city jail last night, said the girl claimed she was bitten 20 times. She shouted every time she was hurt. In the jail last night, she talked and answered questions weakly but sensibly before a crowd of observers. This is the true story of Clarita Villanueva. By Lester Sumrall. I doubt that the book is, at least not this edition, available anymore. There's Lester, pictures of him praying for the girl. Suddenly her facial expressions would change to anguish and horror as if she were confronted with the thing. She would look around wildly and then scream and struggle and hit her arms and shoulders as if she were trying to shake off the thing. Then her strenuous resistance would cease, and she would collapse into the arms of those holding her, weak and half-conscious. After regaining her senses, she said that one of the devils was big and dark with curly hair on his head, chest, and arms. He has large, sharp eyes and two fangs. His voice is a deep, echoing sound. He's shrouded in black. Father Vargas, the prison chaplain, was summoned at 2:30 a.m., and he agreed to come only as an observer. She was bitten for the last time on the right knee. That was the first bite on the lower part of her anatomy. Other bite marks appear on her neck, arms, and shoulders. observers insist that they are within sight all the time. The Manila Chronicle, May 13, 1953. I was in Manila in 1963. You could get in any taxi in Manila and say, take me to the Christ is the Answer Church. They all knew. Take you right there. The church boomed overnight because of this event. The Manila Chronicle, May 13, 1953. Police medics probe case of girl bitten by devils. Quote, police medical investigators last night failed to give a convincing explanation to the puzzling case of the girl who claimed she was being attacked by demons and who substantiated the claim with marks on her skin. I warn you. At least 25 competent persons, including Manila's chief of police, Colonel Cesar Lucero, say that it's a very realistic example of a horrified woman being bitten to insanity by invisible persons. She displayed several bite marks all over her body, inflicted by nobody as far as the 25 witnesses could see. Villanueva writhed in pain, shouted and screamed in anguish whenever the invisible demons attacked her. Father Benito Vargas, chaplain, who witnessed Villanueva in her fits, said it was not his to conclude any verdict, but he said the fact remains that I saw her bitten three times. Villanueva claimed she had been seeing the invisible persons since last Sunday. She claimed the phantoms were two, one tall, evil-looking, dark, garbed in black, and the other short and cherubic with snow-white hair. She said the latter did most of the biting. Villanueva was perfectly normal between fits. After talking for a while, she would shout, have convulsions and hysterics, all the time screaming and her eyes flashing with fire. Then she would point to a part of her body being attacked, then fall almost senseless into the hands of the investigators. Teeth marks, wet with saliva, marked the spots she pointed at. All the time, all witnesses aver, she was never able to bite herself. Third clipping. The Manila Times, May 14, 1953. Hey, you say you're reading this from a book. I was there, my friend. I read the papers. I went to the library and checked it out. You know me. 18-year-old Clarita Villanueva, a city jail detainee, was bitten twice. This is the May 14th Manila Times article. 18-year-old Clarita Villanueva, a city jail detainee, was bitten twice again before mystified doctors and 30 medical interns studying her between 2 and 4 p.m. yesterday. Later in the night, cellmates of the girl said she had gone into a violent tantrum when they refused to give her water. The cellmate said the Villanueva suddenly grabbed a statuette of the Holy Family and was about to throw it on the concrete floor when they held her back and snatched the image away. 10 minutes later, Villanueva got violent again, tried to attack the policeman that was there, and was calmed down only after he'd been sent away. Rid of the horrified look in her face, but still weak and trembling, Villanueva confided to her cellmates that the thing would be at her bedside at 2 a.m. this morning. Dr. Cabrera said that he had requested that the girl be taken to the city morgue for psychological observation. Shortly before 4 p.m., Dr. Cabrera continued, the girl became terror-stricken. The observers grabbed her by the hands and arms, and then she stiffened momentarily before sagging down. She looked at her right index finger. The observers saw two big teeth marks fresh on it. The second attack was the more mystifying. Dr. Cabrera said that Alfonso Aquino, a morgue helper, was holding her arms as the others looked on. They'd taken her to the city morgue for psychological observation. Suddenly she looked to the left of her and then at the ceiling and started beating her arms. As she revived from a faint, she muttered to Aquino. Dialect of the land. It's under your hand. Aquino removed his hand, and in the back of Villanueva's hand, Dr. Cabrera said, were teeth marks that were still moist with saliva and sinking into the skin. The Manila Chronicle, May 16, 1953. It filled the papers of Manila day after day. Quote, police investigators yesterday hit another blind alley in their efforts to clear the mystery behind the claim of an 18-year-old city jail inmate that she was being bitten by demons. You say, I don't believe this. I don't either. I mean, I was there, saw the results of the church that was formed, and talked to the people, and read the paper. I don't believe it. It's true. Absolutely don't believe it. Can't be true, but it is. I get really irritated that things can't be true that are. Police, this is Manila Chronicle, May 16th. Am I boring you? 53. Police investigators yesterday hit another blind alley in their efforts to clear the mystery behind the claim of an 18-year-old city jail inmate that was being bitten by demons. A crowd of 100, which included 2 municipal court judges, 5 doctors, at least 20 interns, and police chief Cesar V. Lucero. Witness Villanueva, jailed on a vagrancy rap, withstand another attack by the invisible demons at 5 p.m. yesterday. They saw 3 spiritualists try to solve the enigma after several doctors failed to give convincing explanations to the case. One of the spiritualists went into a trance and tried to establish contact with the spirits praying over the girl, while another loudly chanted lines from the Bible. Their efforts were futile. Another spiritualist, an aged man, hypnotized the girl and tried to talk to her. He received only inaudible, guttural sounds for answers. Then the girl, still hypnotized, was persuaded to draw her attackers. Draw a picture of them. The minute she took hold of the pencil, the thing attacked her in the throat, in the left arm, and right forefinger. Then the girl fainted. I'm still reading the newspaper article. Quote, still on. A previous attempt to have her outline the spirits had drawn a bite on the right forefinger. All of the bites consisted of the imprint of 16 teeth. Fresh saliva was found on the spots where the invisible teeth dug in. Villanueva said her attackers were 2 flying devils, one a big black sneering figure and the other a snow-white impish man. The latter, she said, did most of the biting. Villanueva said her first attack was late last Sunday, May 10th. Since then, she's had several every day. The girl had her worst fit early Monday morning when she received at least 23 bites. Here's a picture of the poor girl just before they're exercising her in the Villadid prison. Right here. Is Lester laying hands on her as he starts to exercise her here? You don't have to be a super mystic to exercise demons. You want to hear some more? Next story. That one I just read was May 16th. Manila Chronicle, May 19th, 1953. Attack on girl by, quote, thing unnerves mayor of Manila. Manila's hard-boiled mayor, Arsenio H. Lacson, who has defied many a seemingly invisible political god, was helplessly unnerved yesterday as he witnessed a city jail inmate, Clarita Villanueva, undergo attacks from 2 unseen things. The nerve-wracking demonstration of Clarita, who presented a face contorted by fright and agony, proved too much for the usually irrepressible mayor, for it kept him tongue-tied for about 10 minutes during the whole 15-minute ordeal. Touched by the unusual fate that befell Clarita, who incidentally comes from his home city of Bacolod. I preached a week in Bacolod City. Lacson immediately appealed to the church to match the deviltry with spiritual treatment so as to exorcise the evil spirit. Larson conferred late last night with Archbishop Rufino J. Santos at the latter's villa in Mandaluyong, Rizal, a suburb of Manila, regarding the phenomenon. The mayor decided to seek religious intervention on the matter after police medical officers admitted they were as helpless as Clarita in curing the ailment. Dr. Mariano Lara, chief medical examiner who sidled up to Laxon following the first ordeal, admitted he was scared stiff. He said, "I've always believed that the world is made of tangible things, but here we're confronted with the unknown and unseen." The terrifying ordeal was witnessed also by some city officials and reporters covering the city hall beat. The demonstration was held at Laxon's behest at the city morgue, where Clarita was taken from her cell. She was accompanied by some fellow female inmates. At the first attack, the girl writhed and cried out in pain. Then she went into spasms of laughter as if she was being tickled by unseen hands. The second attack left her senseless and unconscious. "Aren't you proud of me? I'm just reading, just reading, ain't stopping. Let me give credit where credit's due. I can stop if you want me to." The second attack left her senseless and unconscious. She did not respond when she was pricked with a pin. Clarita described her invisible attacker. She said one was a very big, dark man with curly hair all over his body. And the other, a boy about 1.5 feet tall with a cherubic face and an oversized mustache. The mayor, who seemed to have gained his composure after a few minutes following the attack, suggested that Clarita convince the things to decamp and leave for Malacanang. If they work on President Quirino and Secretary Castillo, Laxon said, the country's problems may yet be solved. The mayor of Manila in that day was wishing these demons on his worst enemies. Answering in Tagalog, Clarita shouted, "I can't read Tagalog, just the translation. You too," she said to the mayor. "They want to bite you?" "No," the manager said. The mayor said, laughing. "But they want to bite you also," the girl insisted. Visibly perturbed, Laxon suggested that the thing settle for another Laxon, Rafael Laxon, the suspended governor of Negros Occidental, another province. Got a hand with this mayor, boy. He singled out his enemies and sticked them on him. Clarita promised the mayor she'd ask the two unseen things to work on Quirino, Castillo, and Governor Laxon. The attack on Clarita started about 10:15 when the mayor asked Clarita to draw on a piece of paper the likeness of one of the two things. She refused at first. You know there are people listening to me who don't believe a word of this. That's my nature. I can't blame them. Just keep listening, though. You know, there's just too much here to ignore. Am I going to lose all credibility because I'm on this subject? Just go back to the... Go back to the literature of the great. In the dark of the evening, Beowulf. This is the highest literature of Scandinavia. They're talking about devils and demons. In the dark of the evening, Grendel lumbered into the empty hall hunting for food. One thing alone he could not touch. Well, let's go on. Let me be nice. We got it. Wait a minute. Who's Annabelle? We got Annabelle there in the living room, haven't we? Got Annabelle in the living room? We've got Grendel, one thing he could not touch. And who is this girl that all this is saying? The attack started about 10:15 when the mayor asked Clarita to draw on a piece of paper the likeness of one of the two things. She refused at first, but finally consented when the mayor promised to sit beside her. You see, the stories keep going day after day. More and more people get involved. This is the mayor of Manila. 2 million people in that city. It's on the front pages of the paper every day or every two or three days. Mayer promised to sit beside her. Before she could draw a line, she started scanning the ceiling and the walls of the room. She shook her head once. Then, without warning, she emitted a loud cry of pain and agony as she appeared to be struggling with an invisible foe. Onlookers saw teeth marks on her right index finger and on the neck. She looked as if someone was trying to suffocate her. When the first attack was over, she was made to lie in bed. Mayor had been sitting there with tears still streaming down her cheeks. She gave out a loud laugh. After an interval of 2 minutes, the attack was repeated on her and she fell unconscious. What baffled the mayor and other onlookers yesterday was the incident of the rosary and the crucifix. Now, this is different than the other one. The girl wore a rosary around her neck, and when the attack was taking place, it appeared as if someone was pulling the rosary away. The witnesses saw the crucifix torn away from the bed by an exertion of the unseen hand. The mayor picked up the crucifix and tried to hand it to Clarita. She withdrew her hands and showed hostility to the crucifix. The skeptical group of people, including the mayor, left the place visibly bewildered, some frightened and others still considering it a bad dream. Clarita will be injected with truth serum today. Dr. Leopoldo Parto of the University of Santo Tomas Hospital will perform the truth test. City jail authorities said the girl had already been examined by an alienist and she was found mentally sound. Manila Times, May 19, 1953. The thing victim to get truth serum. The headline reads, Clarita Villanueva, 18-year-old city jail detainee who gets bitten, tickled, and nearly strangled, obviously by something out of this world, will be injected with truth serum. But Dr. Leopoldo Pardo, a ranking psychiatrist at the clinic of the Santo Tomas University at 3 p.m. today, paper said. Who is this girl? Am I boring you? Who is this girl? Read another news article. Okay. The Philippines Free Press, December 12, 1953. Nothing attracted more popular attention this year apart from politics than the case of the thing. The paper reads. A delicious shudder went through the nation at this, the latest and surely incontrovertible manifestation of the supernatural. In a world in which science rules, or is supposed to rule, at any rate, from which the unexpected has been banished and the extraordinary is no more, with superstition, which had once raised such mighty temples combined to such half-hearted practices and knocking on wood, the thing was a refreshing breath of air, one might say, from another and more exciting world. What a way to write this up. But this is a newspaper. Clarita Villanueva, 18 years old, unlettered, was picked up for vagrancy sometime in May of this year, lodged in the city jail. She came from the south, the Colored City. She was picked up by the police one night on her way home, wherever that was, and lodged in the city jail. In the woman's detention building, where she was kept with others similarly arrested, took place what was afterward described as the first unusual occurrence in a fantastic series. One night she found her right leg wedged, how she couldn't explain, in her wooden bed. Soon afterward, pebbles were thrown into her cell. The small stones were followed by large ones. Remember, it rained rocks on Donovan? And when the woman in the cell raised their voices in protest, the guard came. Go to bed, the women were told. At that point, Clarita first saw the big one of the two devils, the thing. That was many months ago. Today, one still recalls the furor created by the appearance or the report of the appearance of the visitants from another world. This is the newspaper writing. Comedians often come in pairs. They seem to be especially funny that way. Thus, we have Laurel and Hardy, Abbott Costello, Lewis and Martin, Bob Hope, and Bing Crosby, who are at their best together. Although the great comedians, those who are not merely funny, work alone like Chaplin. The two apparitions were certainly an unusual pair and would have been funny if they were not so sinister. There was the big one. The thing and its partner, the small one. Clarita saw the big one first. It was perched on a beam over her head. When she saw it, it promptly jumped on top of her and began biting her. It was big, black, curly-haired, she afterward told the palpitating press. The small one, which she noticed soon after the big one began its attack on her, was spindle-legged, round-faced, and bearded. It bit her, too. The conclusion was unavoidable. She was demon-possessed. Were the attacks imaginary? What is imaginary? What is real? The medical legal officer who first thought the girl was insane changed his mind later when he saw with his own eyes teeth marks on the arms of the girl after an attack. He also saw for himself that the girl didn't bite herself as he suspected. Strange story, isn't it? You want to hear some more? Well, let's see where Lester first heard of it. That's a pretty good story, too. Thought I had all these places marked. I didn't intend to read this until I finished the other one. It was the tape recorder in the hands of the news reporter mentioned by Dr. Lara that forced me into the story, Summerall writes. The broadcast of the Clarita interview over station DZFM lasted for 45 minutes. It was one of the most blood-curdling programs I've ever heard. In fact, the only program to approximate it was the drama by Orson Welles called Invasion from Mars. The radio announcer dramatically announced the broadcast as follows. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If you have a weak heart, please turn your radio off. I turned the dial of our radio up higher and instantly. There were piercing screams followed by pandemonium. Doctors spoke out of the confusion. This can all be explained. Our records show that this phenomenon has been known before. This is fugue. This is epilepsy. It's extreme hysterical or hysteria. Other persons were excitingly saying, look, the marks of teeth appear. Another would say the girl's being choked by some unseen thing. She's blue in the face and there are marks on her neck. Then Clarita would scream again on the radio. I turned to my wife and said, the girl's not sick, and the doctors are helpless before such an enemy. Her cry is the cry of the damned and doomed. That girl's demon-possessed. It was impossible for me to sleep after listening to that program. I walked the floor. And then comes the story of how he got in touch with the mayor and the encounter of exorcism. The physician, Dr. Mariano B. Lara, Chief Medical Examiner of the Manila Police Department, Professor and Head of the Department of Pathology and Legal Medicine at Manila Central University, Professor of Legal Medicine at the University of Santo Tomas, Manila. He writes an official account of Clarita Villanueva and the thing, and this is the physician speaking. My first notice of Clarita Villanueva, a Bilibid prison inmate whose recent experience during her confinement in jail has attracted worldwide attention, especially from the United States, Australia, and Japan, was the 11th of May, 1953. This is the doctor's account. The Metropolitan newspapers in the city of Manila published a news item about her being a victim of bodily bites by an unseen power. The news story reported that Dr. Angelo Singjian, my first assistant in the medical examiner's office of the Manila Police Department, had been called to observe the phenomenon during the night of May the 10th. The reporters made the statement to the effect that the bodily bites were of supernatural origin. On the 11th of May, upon arriving at my office at the city morgue, I was met by Dr. Abelardo Lucero, my second assistant in the same office, who reported to me orally that he, together with his brother, Lieutenant Colonel Cesar Lucero, Chief of Police of the Manila Police Department, had earlier in the morning of the day gone to the cell to see Clarita Villanueva to make a routine checkup on the biting phenomenon. Dr. Lucero reported that he had seen human teeth-like bite impressions on both arms of the girl, but that he believed that these impressions were likely the effect of her own biting. He further mentioned that he believed the girl, Clarita Villanueva, to be abnormal. I paid no special attention to this foregoing report by the two assistants, considering it a matter of little or no consequence. I didn't care to make any opinion about it. He's about to go and see it himself. Dr. Lara, having received the report from his assistant, he said, I paid no special attention to this foregoing report by the two assistants. They can't write very well anyway, so go ahead and write in the dark. I just hope you don't get your fingers bit while you write. The doctor said, I paid no special attention to this foregoing report by the two assistants, considering it a matter of little or no consequence. I did not care to make any opinion about it, as I had not seen the phenomenon, and my years of training as a doctor are only scientific. I find it difficult and near impossible to accept anything of a supernatural character, the doctor says. But I agree with him. Of this kind of character. On the following morning, the 12th of May, when I arrived at my office, Clarita had been called from her cell and examined by Dr. Lucero in his office. I walked inside. Dr. Lara says, I casually paid notice to her. This is his official record. I did not know who she was until my assistant told me that this is the girl who is the victim of the biting phenomenon. I looked at her superficially and noticed the existence of reddish, human-like bite impressions present on the anterior surface of both arms. As I scrutinized these impressions, I agreed provisionally to the opinion of Dr. Lucero that they could have been produced by her own teeth. I left the matter entirely to Dr. Lucero for the proper disposition of the girl. He recommended hospitalization at the National Psychopathic Hospital in Mandaluyong, Rizal, in order to prevent the Manila Police Department from being scandalized as a party of believers in fakery, and also to prevent the jail from being deluged with curious people wishing to see her. I allowed Dr. Lucero to enforce his wishes. As a matter of fact, I signed the regular form of recommendation for insanity investigation and transference to the psychopathic hospital, labeling Clarita an epileptic, or one given to depressive attacks. I thought the girl was transferred that afternoon, the doctor said, but found out later she was not dispatched as planned. On the 13th of May, I again arrived at my office as usual, not remembering Miss Clarita. Towards midday, visitors came to the office, including my friend Mr. Lapero, in charge of the property and supply section of the Manila Police Department, all of them inquiring what is my opinion about this biting phenomenon, allegedly victimizing the girl. I told these people that insofar as I'm concerned, I have no opinion about this matter, as I had no opportunity to observe her in spite of all sorts of news items appearing in the newspapers with contradicting opinions given by my medical assistants. My friend, Mr. Lapero, invited me to see the girl in the cell and find out whether it was true or not that she was being bitten by something that's invisible. Wherefore, Mr. Lapero, my medical assistant, Dr. Lucero, my dentist, Dr. Gonzalez, and myself proceeded to the female cell where she was confined. We found her there lying on the lower part of a wooden double-deck bunk. Sitting beside her was another female cell inmate, Mrs. Manuel. I talked to Clarita, the doctor says, and inquired whether she is the girl, as described, suffering from the bites, as told by the newspaper reporters, and she answered affirmatively in her native tongue. She was nervous and childish, comparable with her age and lack of educational training, but was polite. I asked her if we could see the bites that we had heard about. Clarita informed us that we should return sometime past midday, about 2 o'clock, when the thing causing the bites would come again. I told her that if I became convinced of someone else biting her, I would try my best to bring her to the Philippines International Fair for exhibition. Clarita smilingly took the joke with the comment that she'd be happy for that, as she would no doubt make plenty of money. However, I couldn't wait for the bites to appear, so I left about 12:05 on the 13th of May. In the afternoon of the same day, about 2:15, I returned to my office where a group of 30 medical interns are studying under me, finishing their doctorate degree from the University of Santo Tomas. They were already gathered for their class. Immediately, I asked my orderlies if Clarita had had any bites during the interval while I was away. My orderlies informed me that Clarita had been transferred since midday to the San Lazaro Hospital for confinement and treatment by my other assistant, Dr. David Cabrera. Whereupon, I called for Dr. Cabrera and inquired whether or not he had sent Clarita to the hospital as reported, and Dr. Cabrera answered affirmatively, explaining that Clarita had a fever at the time. I explained to Dr. Cabrera that I had an appointment with Clarita at about 2 p.m., at which time she promised to be bitten again. Therefore, I requested Dr. Cabrera to have the girl returned from San Lazaro Hospital. This was promptly done, and in a few minutes, Clarita was brought by ambulance to the office of the Medical Examiner, Manila Police Department. At that time, Clarita arrived. She was unconscious and was carried into my observation room, seated on a chair. She was placed in front of the class of interns and myself. The body of Clarita was soft and entirely insensitive to all stimuli. Her arms lifted by me would fall without resistance. Pointed needles and pins touching her skin gave no response throughout her body surface. After several minutes in this condition, Clarita began to come out of this state of insensibility and trance. Meanwhile, I was like Sherlock Holmes of the detective stories. Equipped with magnifying lens and with an unbelieving mind about this biting phenomenon, I scrutinized carefully the exposed parts of her body, the arms, hands, and neck, to find out whether they had had biting impressions. I saw the reddish, human-like bite marks on the arms. She was still soft in the entire body and couldn't stand up by herself. One of my assistants, a cadaver technician, Alfonso by name, helped carry her to a bed for her to rest during this state of partial trance. Alfonso got hold of her body and deposited her on the prepared bed, placing both her hands over her in order that they did not hang downward. At that very instant, this girl, in a semi-trance, loudly screamed repeatedly the word, and it's a Tagalog word, which is a scream of pain in Tagalog. And when I removed Alfonso's hand from Clarita's, I saw